is the Michael J. Epstein Memorial Library, and you're listening to Freeform Radio, 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford.
Take those pictures down, check it out. Truth or consequence, say it aloud. Use that evidence, race it around. Don't the best of them read it out, while the rest of them peter out. Truth or consequence, say it aloud. Use that evidence, race it around.
Good morning and welcome to live DJing here on WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform, commercial free community based radio. Slice That Community Base is happening right now, and that is socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. We're on the air every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and we are myself, Jeff, today, and
Diego,
and we have some technical difficulties you may notice as the show goes on, but we're gonna soldier through them. And actually, Diego just abandoned the studio.
I'm going to check them.
Okay, some hurdles have been put out in front of us today, but we will overcome them, I promise. And
capitalism.
Today's show will have some discussion on Afterburn. meaning after Bernie, what are we going to do next? And not that Bernie, in my opinion, was the solution to anything, but he definitely tapped into that mood of class anger that's out there. We're going to talk about class anger in terms of the Brexit vote, the Leave vote over in England. If you know what that is, we'll explain whether you do or not. Oh, and we might even read a poem. Ha ha, hold your breath for that. And then we have some other things that we've cooked up today that, you know, lesser evilism, some things that are happening with the local situation here with the T, that which is short for the subway system here in Greater Boston. And by the way, we do sort of reference local versus regional versus national versus international, because we do have national and international listeners. And we welcome them again. Go to Facebook, Socialist Radio, Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. Check us out. Go to WMFO.org to listen by computer, which is how we have those listeners from far away. We do go out live over the air. A lot of our listeners maybe not aren't aware of that. They're getting used to podcasts. But we're not just a podcast. We're not just going out over a computer signal through WMFO.org. But you're welcome to listen that way, live streaming or our archive function. Go to schedules, click on Socialist Alternative Radio, and you will get that. You will get to us. At least one of our shows is archived. Fenianrising.org, F-E-N-I-A-N, rising.org, also had had been downloading our shows. Thank you very much for that, Fenian Rising. We didn't solicit them to do that. They just did it on their own because they liked the show, and we really appreciate that. Not sure they're keeping up with that now, which is understandable. Maybe they are. So do you find them on Facebook or on internet?
I do. I go on internet, and they basically have all our shows from...
Even recent ones?
Yeah, even up to 2008. So we're archived.
But up to 2016? Like now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, so we are archived. Thank you very, very much, FenianRising.org. We're archived more than I thought we were. Yeah, here at WMFO, the archive function is pretty limited. It just I don't mean this as a big criticism or anything, but just to let you know that the archive function is 1 week, basically, because we're on every other week, so you're going to get one show, and it's not going to stick around forever. They have archived for 2 weeks, but since we're on every other week, you're only going to get one show archived, and they are not going to save that forever. Let's put it that way. So go to FenianRising.org and the valuable service they're doing, archiving our show. Go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. We recently had the National Convention of Socialist Alternative, and I was very pleased to learn, totally by accident, that, and Socialist Alternative has grown rapidly over the last couple years, mainly due to the election of Shama Sawant, K-S-H-A-M-A, if you want to look her up, first name. Second name, Sawant, S-A-W-A-N-T. Shama is a member of Socialist Alternative who agreed to run. It was a collective discussion. Agreed to run for city council in Seattle back in 2012. We won the race. It wasn't just Shama's effort, although she's obviously key to the effort as the candidate. She put in, so much work and still is. Valuable, wonderful work for Socialist Alternative and the people of Seattle and for socialism nationally. Because once she was elected in 2013, it actually got press all around the country and even internationally, because it's rare, obviously, almost unheard of in recent times to have a socialist elected to a major political position. And, you know, city council of a major city, it's pretty major. It's not president, but it's pretty major, yeah. And so she got elected to City Council of Seattle in 2013, Shama Sawant, as an open socialist, as an open member of Socialist Alternative, even to the point where we were suing the city to get our name on the ballot, because they have this whole nonpartisan thing in this country that was originally considered a progressive thing, so people wouldn't vote automatic party lines like Democrat, for example, when the Democratic Party machines were even more obvious than they are now. But in my opinion, that is a huge, actually a very non-progressive thing, because if a third party comes on the scene, they're forbidden in many cities from putting down their party name. So people don't know that this person's any different. And that also contributes, by the way, this nonpartisan thing contributes to the individualization, further individualization, and I would argue infantilization, if you want to follow me here for a second, of American politics, where you have this situation, especially in local races, but even up to the president, where everyone's like, oh, I like Sally, or I like Jim. You know, the person is just treated as like an individual, and it's just whether they have good character or not. And that should, you know, immediately ring some bells, because so many politicians are charged with corruption and found guilty, that if you know, that's a little off. You're just trying to judge based on moral. I like them or I don't like them. That's idiocy. What you're supposed to represent, what people are supposed to represent politically, is a program and a tradition, if there is one, and a way forward politically in a collective way, not just as an individual martyr or saint or devil, actually, as the case may be. That's not how it works. There are institutions, obviously, behind the politicians. In Sharma's case, all the money raised to get Sharma elected was raised from working people. There was not one penny of corporate cash allowed into the campaign. So anyway, getting back to the main point, though, after Sharma Swat was elected in 2012, she took office in 2013, Socialist Alternative got a lot more attention in the media, and we grew rapidly. So we just had our convention, and I was pleased to see at our convention, totally, someone came up to me and said, "Hey, are you, you know, Jeff Booth? Are you doing the radio show?" I said, "Yeah, I'm co-hosting the radio show, Socialist Alternative Radio." And they said, "Well, somebody joined in Arkansas. Somebody joined Socialist Alternative because they heard about us."
Red state.
Yeah, they heard about us. Through the radio show first. So that shows a number of things. You can get it by computer. Obviously, the signal, live on-air signal, doesn't go out to Arkansas. It barely hits doesn't even hit all of Boston, the greater Boston area. Hits portions of Medford, Somerville, Boston, and some other places, but not a big signal, obviously. So there you go. There's some news about that. I heard of someone in Philadelphia once joined based on listening to the radio show. And you know, it's part of the purpose of this show. The reason I'm pointing this out is that if you never listened before, we're not just here to give you alternative information, which is fine, which is great. We're pretty unique, because we're not just giving you sort of a progressive patina of sort of information based on what's going on in the news or something. And we're not just critiquing the corporate media, although there are elements of that. We're really here to organize people into the socialist movement and into Socialist Alternative. We want people to join Socialist Alternative, join our struggle against capitalism to create a democratic social society, not only here in the United States, but worldwide. And, you know, there's many entry points, many angles in which you can engage with that. And we're trying to get some of those out here on this radio show in a modest way. And we've had some modest success, and we hope to continue. And so, having said that, Diego, you want to join in with anything?
I don't know if you heard on the. They don't tell you this in the media. Obviously, you have to get the alternative media. And I heard this thing about Vermont. I don't know if you heard about that, Jeff. If you go to fooddemocracy.org, basically, it's about Vermont passing the law to label GMO foods. Like, basically everything that's potentially GMO, that has GMO, should be labeled. And guess who was the first one to go against it, to lobby against it? You'd be surprised. Whole Foods, Whole Chex. Enough said. So go to fooddemocracy.org for more information. I heard this on 7:40 a.m., which is a station based in Cambridge, but they're also based out of Bath, Maine, and listeners support it. But it was basically really, well, didn't mind shock me at first. But then when he was saying, "Guess who's the first one?" I said, "Whole Foods." And he said, "Whole Foods." I was like, "Great."
Yeah, and that's and Whole Foods is near and dear to our hearts, because Diego used to work there, and it was funny for a long time. We would use a lot of pseudonyms for Whole Foods without saying the word, and now we can say the company's name. Yeah, in fact, and if you're not clear what GMOs are, I'm not 100% clear, but it's basically genetically modified organisms, meaning seeds and so on are modified in a way that is pretty new, pretty untested, and according to some studies, pretty unsafe in the sense of what it potentially might do to your health and so on. And also, people just want that labeled, basically, so they can choose whether or not to go that route. And I personally choose not to, like others. And I'm not at all anti-science or anything. This is just a big, I think, big thing for the food companies to make more money. The same way they use tons of antibiotics and pesticides and everything else to poison people. You know,
you would think Whole Foods with their whole non-MGO program would be behind this. You know, oh yeah, Vermont's going to be the first state to, you know, to be the first federally to enforce supermarkets. Basically, it would be everything labeled MGO. I mean, GMO. Because basically everything could be potentially GMO, unless it's organic.
Well, I unfortunately go to Whole Foods every once in a while. I've cut down a lot, but because of personal financial hardship or family financial hardship, and I'm going to get into that, not in a personal way, but in the sense of got some stuff here. More Americans are struggling to make rent. Oh, that's breaking news, huh? And the MBTA fare is going up. But anyway, when I pop into Whole Foods, I mean, I notice, well, Whole Foods, right? They brag about they're organic, they're the healthiest. But, you know, most of the stuff is not organic, right? No. So you're bopping around looking for organic, and you kind of get in this middle ground where, oh, so it looks real nice, because Whole Foods is good at that. They're good at making things look nice. And you look at it, looks real nice, and you buy it, and all of a sudden it's, well, wait a minute, it's really expensive and it's not organic. What am I doing here? Time to head to Market Basket, you know, which is, by the way, not that cheap in my opinion either. I walk out of Market Basket now spending way too much money. Like, I spent over $100 in Market Basket last night. And granted, you walk out with a lot of plastic bags full of stuff, but it still doesn't seem like that much stuff, and it's just getting really expensive. If you want protein. if you don't need to eat protein, which humans really do, then you can survive, you know. But even the beans and rice, man, especially if you want organic, it's up there, you know. I was watching this health show. This is a total digression. I apologize to Diego and to our listening audience. But so I guess the guy's trying to sell a book. This is on public broadcasting, and unfortunately we have TV again after years of not having it. We have a signal, so it comes in rottenly, but we see some regular shows. So this is PBS, and the guy's saying, eat a big bowl of salad per day, eat a bean soup, and then eat steamed vegetables. Eat these three things every day and you will be thin and healthy and live a long life and all that. And I kind of buy into that a bit, but I think every day would be too much for me. But also, though, the guy didn't get into the cost. And if you're really sucking down the vegetables that much, you better be buying some organic and washing them a lot, because you're sucking down, like, lots of pesticides. And he didn't talk about any of that stuff. They never do, you know. It's like the doctor says, go get exercise. Well, okay, when? You're gonna pay for my gym membership, and you're gonna make the time out of my schedule to exercise? Okay, you know, and they're not. Of course, doctors don't do that, and you know, whatever. Most of them don't even think about it. Anyway, back to the cause. We are Socialist Alternative Radio, and again, we are here to help you get involved with the struggle for socialism. At best, at worst, we'll give you some information you probably aren't getting much of. Give you something to look at, something to check out. But, you know, you can get in touch with us very easily. Go to, again, Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook, but more importantly, go to socialistalternative.org on the internet. Actually check out Committee for Works International at socialistworld.net, because we're in political solidarity with them. Go to also in Boston, you can call 910-639-3948. In Worcester, you can call 617-285-9346. In Rhode Island, you can write to socialistalternativeri@gmail.com. I know I said all those really fast, but if you just go to Socialist Alternative in your area at socialistalternative.org, you'll get a whole bunch of addresses and phone numbers and places to get in contact, and that's really good. There's also just a national email, info@socialistalternative.org. Now, I want to start today's show with, sorry, we started a little bit late, and sorry for the technological problems we're having. But there's a series of nationwide meetings, or forums, we're calling them, sponsored by Socialist Alternative, and they are called Beyond Bernie. We need a united party of the 99%. Protest the DNC. Continue the political revolution. Now, again, go to socialistalternative.org to get a list of these meetings. And The one I'm going to talk about, there's one in Boston. I don't have that info in front of me. I apologize to the Boston branches of Social Alternative for that. But if you go to, again, socialalternative.org, you'll find out the information for that. Also, I think you could find Social Alternative in Boston on Facebook. I'm not sure it's like Boston Social Alternative or how it's phrased. And you'll find out about the meeting in Boston. This one I'm going to talk about is in Worcester. It's on July 16th. It's at 3 p.m. I'm just realizing that the leaflet doesn't have the time on it. And this is just a draft of a leaflet, by the way. Hopefully this hasn't gone out in public yet. Yeah, okay. And it is... sorry, just writing that down, that little typo of not having the time down there. It is a meeting that's going to be interestingly feature video from both Jill Stein, who's the candidate of the Green Party for president, and Shama Sawant, who I've already described, a socialist alternative. Oh, by the way, she was reelected to city council in Seattle just this past year. So Shama Sawant, member of Socialist Alternative, independent socialist, campaigning, helping to campaign for Jill Stein. She'll be giving a video speech. So will Jill Stein. Then we'll have a short speaker. Not short in terms of stature, but a brief speech from a speaker from Socialist Alternative. Hopefully a brief speech from someone from the Green Party in Worcester. And then open discussion. And this is all at the Worcester Friends Meeting House or Meeting Building, whatever it's called, on Saturday, July 16th. That's at 901 Pleasant Street in Worcester. Worcester Friends Meeting House, 901 Pleasant Street in Worcester, 3 p.m. on that day. And join us at the Worcester Friends Meeting to discuss how to help Jill Stein's campaign make the biggest possible impact in 2016. And by the way, it's not a meeting of the Worcester Quakers. It's their place of meeting. That's where we're having this. This is sponsored by Socialist Alternative. Join us at Worcester Friends Meeting Place or whatever to discuss how to help Jill Stein's campaign make the biggest possible impact in 2016, how you can help mobilize for the protest at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia in July 23rd through the 28th. There's going to be a big contingent of Socialist Alternative members in Philadelphia, maybe not big, but a certain number in Philadelphia on July 23rd through the 28th. And also how we can build toward a Socialist Alternative to this crisis-ridden capitalist system. So this meeting is yes, it's about, hey, we're supporting Jill Stein. We want to continue the political revolution. We want to, keep fighting after Sanders, as is most likely, based on everything he said and done, going to, give it all over to Clinton, to Hillary. That's going to leave a lot of disappointed people behind from the Sanders campaign that aren't going to want to vote for Clinton or Trump, obviously. It's going to leave people that are already beyond the whole two-party thing. So they were already beyond Bernie and the Democrats, and they were for Stein. And it's going to leave people that are also in that category of sort of independents who... maybe don't vote, maybe are registered as independent. All those people, we're trying to attract all those kind of people and even diehard Clinton supporters, if they have an open mind enough, to come to this meeting and discuss, well, what's the way to go forward now in this election cycle and beyond? And that's something a lot of meetings aren't going to be discussing. Come discuss the best way forward for independent politics. Break from the Democrats, Republicans. Build a left alternative to Trump. We'll be discussing the whole lesser evil thing, the genuine fears of Trump. But if you're afraid of Trump, you should also be afraid of Clinton. Clinton actually has more power than Trump.
More scared of Clinton.
Yeah. So, Diego, I don't know if you heard about this meeting, but...
Yeah, I'm more scared of Clinton, but also Trump is just another demigod, so to speak, of capitalism.
Yeah, now I just got some miscellaneous stuff here, but important stuff. That I don't know about you, but here it is the summer, and I drive through some of the rich neighborhoods, and it's pretty quiet, and some of that's because the colleges here in Boston, the Boston area, kind of eat up all the land and stuff, and break into the neighborhoods and take up a lot of valuable real estate and all that stuff, right? So that's happening. So you drive by a university neighborhood in the summer and there's not as much going on, obviously. But then there's also just rich neighborhoods where the universities don't have a big footprint, as they say, or none. And I noticed it's very, very quiet. You know, I'm thinking, what's going on? Oh, yeah, well, it's the usual summer exodus to the second home by the lake or the ocean. Right? So, yeah. So that's really nice. But I contrast it with my own situation and the situation of many people that I know of. No vacation at all because we can't afford it. The staycation, as they say, at best. My wife and I trying to juggle our schedules, so the point where we're probably never going to be together, the whole family won't be together for a day off or a week off because we're just juggling to take care of our young kids so we don't have to pay for summer camp for the most part over the summer. We're still shelling out for a very expensive month of summer camp, but for the most part, we're cutting back on that. And it's just getting tougher and tougher to make ends meet, you know? Yeah, it's getting worse.
Little digression. I remember in the 80s, even when I was here, when I first came here, there was some subsidized things with the schools, public schools, for like, oh, okay, I would go to summer camp. My mother would go to work, and I would just go to summer camp because it was part of it. Maybe she paid a little bit, but it was subsidized. I mean, I was just wondering what happened to that.
It's still around. It's limited. It usually is also limited by income. On paper, my wife and I make more money than we would be able to qualify. There's this thing happening with salaries that everybody knows about but never talks about.
So they divide and conquer that way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's this thing with salaries that everyone knows about but nobody talks about, which is basically we're always talking about gross salary, right? Gross versus net. This is the biggest scam ever. So gross salaries... I'm just giving you that. I'm just note to Diego. That's just a good article about the Democrats, Republicans. I'm mentioning. We'll mention it later. Anyway, sorry for that little note there. Gross salaries are what you get before taxes. Obviously, net salaries are what you get after taxes and everything else that comes out of your check. So, my check, you have taxes, huge taxes coming out because working people are getting taxed to death in this country. That's not including property taxes if you own a home, by the way. And then you have, and that might surprise you, you're listening to a socialist radio show and we don't like taxes. No, we hate frickin' taxes. Real socialists, real revolutionary socialists hate taxes on working people. We absolutely want zero taxes on working people. But we want taxes up the wazoo on the big corporations and on the rich. We want to make Eisenhower's regime, where they had 90% tax on the super wealthy, look like a bargain. We want to expropriate massive amounts of money from the big corporations and the super rich. Why, you ask? Because it's working people that create the value and the profits that they live off of. And then they claim it's their own. Warren Buffett's going around, flying around saying, I did this, I did that. Bill Gates is going around flying, I did Microsoft. You didn't do crap, man. You didn't do anything. It was, in Gates' case, people have studied it. He was siphoning off the government, what the government already discovered and done with the internet. He's got his capital. Where'd that come from? All capital comes from labor. It comes from wealth generated by the human labor. And that is collective human labor, not one person. You want to create capital working by yourself, really by yourself? You're really not getting any help? Really not doing everything yourself? Digging every raw material out of the ground, building a machine, refining the raw material. You know, that's ridiculous. Obviously, you spent 100 years to create one car. If you're doing it completely as an individual. And yet the CEO of General Motors, I guarantee you, I crap you not, I really want to swear and I'm not going to, is going to get up at a Rotary Club lunch and say, I did this and this and I'm a great man. Or someone else is going to say that about them. When the reality is all they've done is exploit the crap out of human labor, out of the poor people, out of the workers. And by the way, exploit the crap out of nature and polluted the crap out of nature. Today is the day of me saying crap instead of other more serious words that might get us in trouble. So anyway, I'm feeling the burn this summer, and it's not love for Bernie. I mean, Bernie has his strengths and weaknesses. He should not have run as a Democrat. That's the thing that keeps me from, you know, considering campaigning for him or voting for him or whatever. But I'm feeling the burn in another way, the B-U-R-N, in terms of I'm just really sick of inequality in the general sense. And really sick of the hardship of living in this country in the individual sense, of all the precarious living. I thought finally I'd reached an age where I wasn't on the knife's edge. You know, not living paycheck to paycheck, but I am. I'm back to that now. Back to the paycheck to paycheck, back to living on the knife's edge, back to what I'm going to lose my home. No, yeah. never left it. Anyway.
Yeah, we never left it. Well, I mean, look at me now. I left Clover or Clover, this new conglomerate or whatever you want to call it, of vegetarian over, what do you call it, overpriced vegetarian chain of fast food, and they liken themselves to be the vegetarian McDonald's, which is like, that's even worse. Don't even compare yourself to that. That's like an oxymoron. But anyway, now I'm working in this kind of like, I feel like an artisan, you know, like going back to the little business that opens up that may fail in a year. As long as I get like 6 months in there, who knows? Or maybe I get some unemployment after the, you know, the smoke clears or something. So here I am, you know. We're living paycheck by paycheck. I've come close this year becoming homeless or knowing where's the next, you know, $800 for my rent going to come from, and surviving on food stamps still. And now I have to go to, they probably know I'm working, so they summoned me to go to the office to get proven if I still am approved or get anything at all. So here I am.
Yep. Yeah, and there's so many, and the reason we're going into this is because we're going to talk about that Brexit vote later. We're going to try to explain to any liberals out there or anyone wondering about how that could happen. You got to understand what class anger is. You got to understand a little bit about it. You got to understand where it's coming from and how it's not enough to organize a movement around, but if you don't have any of it, then, and if you don't understand it, say you're rich, but you want to help the workers' movement, that's fine. Come and help the workers' movement. You know, donate some money, you know. Come and pay your dues, you know. Help organize unions. Help organize socialist alternative, whatever. It's not like the individual bourgeois or the individual rich person is the problem. It's the class. And it's a class that consciously and unconsciously rules through the system of capitalism, owns through the system of capitalism, etc. I was watching a thing, a little digression here, by George Carlin last night on Facebook, a clip I'd never seen before, and I've seen a lot of his stuff because ultimately Carlin was a nihilist. You know, he didn't come out to organize. He came out to complain and saw no way forward, ultimately. But I think maybe in his heart of hearts he did, because he bothered to complain, and his complaints were very much infused with socialist ideas. And he was on some Bill Maher's talk show one time, and I don't know who the guy baiting him was, but some guy kept red baiting him. That sounds like Karl Marx talking, George. And all he did was ignore that. I'm not sure that's the best way to deal with that, but he ignored it. And finally said, instead of defending Marx, which I would have done, he said, look, social class is a reality whether you like it or not. I'm paraphrasing. He said it funnier than I am, or actually angrier than I am. Social class is a reality whether you like it or not, and it's there, and it's not going away, you know? And that's what we're going to get into a little bit in this show is, you know, class anger. You know, if you don't understand that, if you're satisfied with the status quo at some level, at some big level, then you're not going to understand why people are going to vote to leave the EU, or why people are going to vote for someone that's beyond the pale of NPR, you know? Someone like Sanders, really, even though Sanders screwed that up by staying in the Democratic Party, or someone like Trump, even from an ignorant point of view, not taking into account enough his racism, obviously, and his just plain ignorance and idiocy. But you're not going to have in a capitalist system, you know, like also paraphrasing Carlin, well-educated, critical thinkers. All they want is people that are smart enough, educated enough, smart is a different thing, but educated enough to, as Carlin said in one monologue he did before he died recently, fairly recently, smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork, you know, or the computer stuff. And then, and that's it, you know, not to think beyond that. And so there's a certain number of people in this country, obviously, not their fault necessarily, but they don't think beyond that. And then there's a lot of people, more than you would think, that do. But to form, are they in a place where they can join a socialist group, or are they in a place where they feel they have the time to organize? I mean, everyone has a little more time than they think they do, myself included, to add to the socialist movement, to get involved, for example, with Socialist Alternative or whatever. But it's hard. It can be difficult if you're stressed with like a lot of Americans are, a lot of people are in general around the world with working two or three jobs or being unemployed and trying all the time to find a job with that stress over your head. And everything seems to be, from the point of view of working, a lot of working people, everything seems to be getting worse. You know, and that doesn't mean there aren't little upticks or little moments of, you know, relief. You know, like, okay, I'm relieved that gas prices are relatively low. But that's not my whole life. Everything else is going up. The frickin' tea is going up. Isn't that insane, by the way? We're going to get into that in a minute. But isn't that insane, raising the tea when gas prices are low? It's going to force everyone into their car.
Well, I was watching the other day, and Chronicle. Sometimes you're watching TV, and you see, and you know, it's nothing on TV. So it's like, okay, let me watch Chronicle. And they were talking about gentrification, and they're doing it in a way that's like, yeah, almost getting there like Marx. Yeah, but you're doing it pro-business, like... Yeah,
nice coffee.
yeah, exactly. So they talk about all the new how. If you look in Somerville, where supposedly that new green light is going to go through, and it's going to gentrify and further to gentrify what you would call Somerville, the old school Somerville. You have all these nice, just on my way here, all these nice new condominiums coming up all around the areas where it used to be like old warehouses, you know, all rotten down, you know, instead of housing for the people and stuff. But this is gentrification at its best right now with this new green line and everything's going up.
Yeah, I'm going to, that's a good segue, condominiums, Diego. Let's just get into this real quick. We're going to go through some stories that kind of are providing hopefully some sort of
a whole new casino in Everett. Oh, further gentrification in this area.
Yeah, you gotta love all the casino stuff. I don't even want to get into that because it's a whole world in itself of totally screwing over working people in so many ways. Right now, Trump casino workers are on strike in New Jersey, but if you go down there, so I've read. I haven't been down there in many, many years, but all the big casinos are folding. Atlantic City's looking worse than ever, and that's saying a lot because it wasn't looking too good in the 80s. Yeah. And anyway, but what we're getting into here, if you're wondering what's the thread connecting all these stories, is we're trying to explain a little bit through, even whether it's anecdotally or through stuff we're critiquing in the corporate media, just trying to explain where this class anger comes from, why, you know, and it's going to be hard for you to understand if you're a listener who's basically convinced themselves this is the best. What is Voltaire's, Pangloss's famous thing, the best of all worlds, the best of all possible worlds, or something like that? I'll have to check that quote. It's not not even close. Yeah,
Thatcher said, right, the end of history, as Thatcher said.
Well, Thatcher was quoting Fukuyama, this guy who also went back on that after the collapse of Stalinism. But anyway, listen to some of this stuff, and then you can decide. This is just the tiny, tiny tip of the iceberg. Then you can decide, well, yeah, I can understand how some people aren't satisfied with things, even if you happen to be doing okay for the moment. And you could, by the way, slide quickly back into where what we're talking about, even if you're doing okay. More Americans are struggling to make rent. Now, in the Boston area, this is not news, but we're just going to give you some stats you can use if you're arguing with someone over coffee or some, you know, some jerk that's going to vote for Trump or something or for Clinton. The number of renters dedicating at least half of their income toward housing has hit a record high of 11 million people in 2014, according to the annual State of the Nation's Housing Report from the Joint Center for Housing Studies of Harvard University. So you might want to check out their reports. This is from the State of the Nation's Housing Report from the Joint Center for Housing Studies at Harvard University. A total of 21.3 million are spending 30% or more of their paycheck to cover their rent. It's also a record high. Personal finance experts generally suggest, I love this, budgeting around 30% of monthly income to cover housing costs. Now, this is my own saying here, my own words, are you insane? Are you freaking insane? Because, yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example, right? All right, I'm more than half. My rent's $800. I may receive about $1,200 a month now, now with my situation being laid off, what have you. That's way more than, I only get $400 to close to $450 to pay my bills. That's it.
Yep.
Those beyond half.
I had times where I was exactly where you're at. I had like every you really had to watch every cent. That's how it was. Now I'm back to that, but for a different calculation. The cost of owning a house and paying a mortgage, plus housing repairs, which are falling way behind. I mean, they're important. Plus taxes.
And more mouths to feed.
Yeah. And kids, I'm not going to throw everything in the mix. So that's a good point. Just the housing costs alone are more than half, and or more than 30%. Sorry, and then you have it could be more than half. If we got the repairs done, which we can't. Now here we go. Rents, quote. It's a quote from the article again. Rents are rising faster than wages. That's a direct quote. Rent prices rising faster than wages. Yeah, no kidding on that one also, but it's good to hear. Get some validation from this think tank. Household budgets are taking a hit. No kidding. You're losing such a large portion of a paycheck to cover housing means cutting back in other areas. Yes, of course. So this guy says, Dan McHugh, a senior researcher at the Joint Center, quote, when you have to dedicate such a high portion of your income to rent every month, it forces you to make difficult decisions. Yes, that's true, Dan. Not only does that mean less spending on essentials like food, clothing, and healthcare, it also makes it tougher to achieve a long-term financial security by saving for an emergency fund, a down payment, or retirement. You know? And yes, yes, yes. Nobody has an emergency fund, Dan. Down payments are really, really hard to get together. Usually you get to do it with help from family or whatever. And retirement, forget about it. You know, I mean, I just got a thing from the mail on retirement. I thought that, oh, I've been plugging away at this crappy job for 30 years. That should get me somewhere with retirement. But starting in 2001, Harvard University, the quote unquote nonprofit mega corporation that is really making huge profits and has $37 billion just in endowment alone, not to mention all the other sources of income, they stopped contributing to the defined benefits pension, which is the traditional pension. In 2001, they stopped putting money into it.
But you don't get Social Security.
Well, no. I will if I survive, I'll get who knows what Social Security will be like by the time I retire. But like, you know, if I retire at 67, I'll get Social Security. Social Security is crap, right? It's crap. But I was hoping to get like this defined benefit pension thing because when Harvard first. Unfortunately, with my union leadership's collaboration to their everlasting shame, they agreed back in the 90s for Harvard to go over to this pension plan that sounds like a 401k plan where Harvard would put money into the stock market for you a little bit. You could add to it if you wanted to. So a lot of workers were sucked into adding to it. I was like, I'm not going to add anything to it. I'm living paycheck to paycheck as it is. Screw you. Plus, I have the defined benefit pension plan.
It's a gamble, too.
Yeah, it's a gamble. People have lost a lot of money through that stuff. So then, but I found out, I was like, over the years, fast forward to now or recently, I was like, I was promised that defined benefit pension at Harvard would be worth a lot more than the invested pension. Or invested thing. I'm going to call it the investment account. I'll just call it that for shorthand. It's not really called that. Or maybe it is. I don't remember. But they're not. See, they're about equivalent. And how did that happen? I finally found out yesterday, the big mystery. I thought, well, that must mean, before yesterday, I thought Harvard must be putting less money into the pension. But I had no facts. I had no evidence. Harvard itself has sent out a letter to people like me that admitted that in 2001... they stopped putting money into the defined benefit pension. Why? Just because they're greedy scum. No reason. They didn't say they were greedy scum, but they are. So they didn't give a reason. They just stopped, right? So that means that the only thing happening with that defined benefit pension is it's earning interest on what exists in the thing. And the interest with a limit of 10%. You can't go over 10%. Another arbitrary screw you worker thing is happening there. Meanwhile, in the investment fund is, you know, goes up and fits and starts, but is now equivalent to the Harvard one. Big shock. When I asked that question in the 90s to the people doing the seminar about switching over, I said, hey, is the defined benefit pension, which I'm qualified for since I've been here already for a while and I'm grandfathered in, is that going to be worth more than the investment pension? They literally laughed at me. And they were people from the investment pension people. They literally laughed at me and said, of course it will be. A defined benefit pension is always better than these investment options. But there's a way to screw over defined benefit pension. There's many ways. You stop putting money into it. How's that legal? I don't know. It just is. Or you tear up the contracts that guarantee people pension, which has been happening to everyone from public sector workers in Detroit to wherever. companies just saying, oh, you're retired, we don't have to pay you a pension anymore. And the state, controlled by the capitalists, I don't mean the individual states, I mean the government, controlled by the capitalists, lets them get away with it through the court system they also control.
Well, no, the forethought that just came into my head, this was 2001, this was a new norm. Also, it was a time when Bush was in office with a 401k, saying, oh, you should invest into the stock market. You know, take your money and invest it instead of, you know. So, I don't know. Does that correspond? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, totally. And, of course, as you know, it's bull because I saw this. I'll give you one quick example. This talking head, pundit, and financial advisor was on the news the other night. I don't know if it was a news show or offshoot of a news show, but basically admitting to a PBS reporter. And by the way, if you think I mentioned PBS because I'm plugging them, I'm not. You know, it's for me, that's the propaganda broadcasting service. For me, that's the pro-business service. For me, this is conservative lies basically coming out of PBS. And by the way, if you follow public radio and PBS and all that, if you follow the internal stuff, you know that they're moving to the right, by the way, even probably by some liberal standards, because the Koch brothers are now funding that stuff. The Ray Kroc's widow has put a lot of money into it. They get their money from the super rich.
They get foundations up the yank, you know.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, like every time you see at the end of a show, it's like corporation. Everything's a corporation. What happened to the, like listener supporter or something like that, or, you know, the people?
Well, what happened to the government? I mean, the government was supposed to fully fund that stuff, and at one point they just basically said, no, let's rethink this, and let's have private corporations fund what's supposed to be public broadcasting. Yeah, that was a smart move, but it's not about smart or not smart. It's about power, you know, and capitalists are always trying to assert their power over culture, over education, over every aspect of society, because that in turn is linked into their way of controlling society in order to make more profits for themselves through controlling the government and so on. So back to the rents going up article, big news. But again, just reading this so you have some stats so you can wipe out the conservative next to you at work next time you get into this argument, if you ever do, or at school or whatever. Middle-class renters in expensive cities are struggling. In the 10 cities with the highest housing costs, renters with middle-class incomes are having a particularly hard time making ends meet. Nearly 75% of renters earning $50,000, and 50% of those making $45,000 to $75,000 living in those hot markets considered cost-burdened, whatever that means, they are spending at least 30% of their income on rent.
Can they call me middle-class? I feel very working class or underclass.
Yeah, the definition of middle class is just so arbitrary. So here they seem to be saying someone making $30,000 a year can be considered middle class. And by what stretch of the imagination can you make $30,000 a year, say, in greater Boston and be considered middle class? I don't know. And it's not just young people who are renting, another subheading in this article. Quote, the shift toward renting has been widespread among age groups, incomes, and different types of households. Last year, they saw the biggest surge in new renters in history, according to the report, bringing the number of people living in rental units to around 110 million people, or 36% of households. Middle-aged renters made up a lot of the new demand, with 40% of renters are now 30 to 49. And renters are sitting at, you know, and that's because the younger people, right, they live at home if they can. And I don't blame them. I mean, there's a Anyone that does that name and shame to someone living at home in their parents' basement, what, are you crazy? What, you'd rather be out having some landlord suck that money out of you? I mean, I feel sorry for the kids that have to do that, because, like, given my family situation and even some that were less bad or whatever, it would be incredible tension every day. Living at home would be just a battlefield every single day. I got out as soon as I could, and I never regret that. That was great. But living at home for a lot of youth is pure torture because of the pressures and ravages of capitalism, alienation, and so on the family, or on human relationships. But some people I know have good relationship with their parents, and I would say to them, stay at home as long as you can. Stay there forever. Who wrote the rules? If you like it, if you have a good relationship, if you get some privacy somehow, and you can still have your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever over, then you stay there, you know, because
it ain't broken.
Because, you know, the last thing you want to do is pour money down the gullet of a landlord, like a greedy gull sucking down fish or something. I mean, there's just no end to the greed of a landlord. And I've spent so much money propping up the lifestyle of the rich and shameless in by renting most of my life that I regret that terribly. I didn't have the option of living at home, but anyway, I don't name and shame anyone with that stuff. Oh, you're living at home. It shows you're immature or something. No way, no way. It shows you're smart. You're smart. Live at home as long as you can. If you can hack it, if your home is around here, you know, do it.
Yeah, geez, how are you going to demonize someone that way? That's like when I was doing the CEP, which is the Cambridge Employment Program. The first thing they told me, employer's market. They like to see that you're always working. It shows resilience. I'm like, really? I mean, in my head, I'm like, I'm really melting. Like, oh, this is like so numb. You know what? But that's just my take on that.
Yeah, it's like basically if you look at these stats on renting that I'm reading out, what are they not saying? That's so obvious. What they're not saying is less people could afford to buy a house. Duh. And the way they define house, what a house is like, is it going to be one of those small, tiny homes? Did you hear about that? My wife Tina was saying it. It was this new thing. I mean, it's a pure product of the liberal imagination, which is never think of the way to really overthrow the system. Only think of ways to mitigate. Only think of ways to like do what's acceptable under the system, no matter how horrible and ridiculous those things are. So there's a thing about small housing. Why do we need big houses? So they're building these tiny little houses that are like the size of a room, but they're sitting alone on a tiny little lot. You ever read about this? Oh, it's sick. And they see it as the way to end homelessness and stuff. And, you know, I don't know if I've lived in tiny places. I lived in a cellar one time and paid rent in a cellar that was unheated. And it was just a part of the cellar where they used to store potatoes and stuff. You know, this was an old house. And like, you know, I'm paying rent on that. And it was just room enough for a bed and a shelf. And like, you want to spread this around and you want to put a bathroom in there somewhere and some way to cook. What you're describing is hell. You're describing a prison cell, you freaking liberal idiot.
Yeah, that's like in Central America, they did that. In Brazil, they've done that, and it's failed. I mean, now they call them the shanty towns, you know, the favelas. So that's just basically where we're going.
I'm talking smaller than the favelas. Oh, I'm talking tiny, intentionally built small homes that people think this is some sort of solution to anything, and it's really just hell. I mean, I can't even imagine it. People are already living very overcrowded in America. Like, this article doesn't get into that. Like, all the people to afford these rents, some of them are people living with multiple roommates, right? And they're still paying way too much in rent, and they've got no room, no privacy. It's just crazy. What else do we want to say here? Low-income renters getting squeezed out. Yeah, no kidding. Because you have more people, even some of them more affluent, as they call them in this article. I wouldn't call them affluent, but people make a little more money, forced to rent, squeezes out the people lower down the chain, down the food chain. Listen to this. Median rent on a new apartment was $1,381 in 2015. That means half of all new apartments were at least that much, which means a renter would have to make $55,000 a year to really be able to afford the rent based on the criteria of not paying more than 30%. How many people make $55,000 a year? Not many. And with a typical renter making about $34,000 a year, there you go, that means an affordable rent would be about $850. Affordable. Homeownership is becoming more affordable, they say at the end of this article, which is not true, basically, but they're still going to say that. And they don't even give very good information about that. They don't give a stat on that. So that was interesting. They end with a little lie, but the rest of it, yeah. Now, here in the Boston area, and this is probably happening in many areas, other areas, the price of riding this subway system is going up, and if you were here, you'd see a lot of propaganda about the subway system here, all from the standpoint of somehow it's a closed thing that's not related to the general assault of capitalism and neoliberalism, which is part of capitalism, on living standards of working people. Somehow this becomes a discussion about, oh, the tea is old, they call it the tea here in the Boston area. The tea is old. There's not enough money. They don't explain why there's not enough money. It's in debt. They don't explain what debt is, and bankers are making money off this debt. You know, it's all this enclosed little problem. What they do is they shrink everything down to like a story that they think working people will believe, and some do, unfortunately, that has no basis in a real context of the reality of the situation. It has no basis in the context of the reality of the situation. You could eliminate the debt of the MBTA in various ways. You could cancel the debt. Politically, you could just say, you could pass a law, this happens, where you say, no, we're not paying the debt anymore. The MBTA does not have to pay the debt anymore. It's a public service. We care more about the public service than we do care about the bankers. See you later, bankers that own T debt. Now, of course, the bankers would raise holy hell. They would try to organize all sorts of political opposition through the Democrats and Republicans, and you wouldn't get legislation like that passed, most likely. But it's an option, okay? Then there's the option of raising taxes on the rich and shameless and the big corporations, raising more taxes on them. Even at the state level, there are ways to raise taxes on the rich. There are ways to raise taxes on the big corporations. They don't even consider that. It's not even in the discussion. It's not even part of anything to do with the stuff you hear about the tea. All you hear about is there's a budget shortfall. So all that kind of propaganda, and it's not just the propaganda, it's the political appointees on the MBTA board. It's not elected. They're appointed by Democratic Party hacks who put people in there that they know will accept the narrow paradigm they've created. It's completely arbitrary and false, that you can't touch, you can't get more revenue in through taxes, through eminent domain, whatever. You know, there's all sorts of ways to get money and property and so on. And then use that to make a system free. It should be free. And instead, the price, here's the bottom line here, the price of riding the stupid MBTA is going up 9.3% on average starting 2 days ago, July 1st. What's the date today? Spacing on that.
July 3rd,
yeah. 2 days ago, July 1st. It's going up. By the way, we have to stop for 1 second and give our legal identification. We are WMFO Medford. Another way to say that is WMFO in Medford, also known as Tufts Freeform Commercial Free Community Based Radio at 91.5 FM WMFO, also known as Tufts Educational Radio. We have lots of names, lots of things to go by. And back to, you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio if you just tuned in. Talking music from a working class democratic perspective. It is democratic socialist perspective. I forgot that. That was bad. Talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. Don't forget the socialist part, because that's what we're all about. 110% pro-revolutionary socialism, 110% pro-union, 110%, you know, working class. And today we're getting into the class anger wing of things through all these things hitting us. And the latest is 9.3% increase. Now, think about this. What does this do, right? You raise the fares every freaking year, just about. Not every year, but it's just, they go up a lot within a short amount of time. We haven't had a strike since the 70s. The Carmen's Union, unfortunately, you know, is just, as far as I can tell, a paper tiger. They're not there for you know, probably because they allowed a lot of part-timers in the 80s and 90s. They don't know how to organize people into a cohesive, strong strike. Really what's needed is a general strike in the city of Boston to stop these MBTA fare hikes, a lot of other things going.